everybody. Welcome to Matt's Holiday Movie Madness, the podcast where we talk about holiday movies. And today we are joined by my friend and yours, Michael Kauth, resident Ernest expert, because we're going to talk about Ernest Saves Christmas. Say hello, Mike.
Hello, Matthew. Thank you for having me on. As you said, I am a huge Ernest fan, have been since I was, I don't even know, maybe six or seven. I discovered Ernest and been a fan and was excited to come on and talk about Ernest Saves Christmas, one of the best Ernest films.
Oh, I totally agree. I love this film. It's a mainstay, much like Scared Stupid. I watch this every Christmas. It is in, and as you know, this podcast is mostly about Christmas movies. Yeah, but Scared Stupid or Saves Christmas is always on the top of my list.
Yes, it is one of those I recorded off television as soon as I was able to.
As soon as I would run a VCR.
Yes. We would have a VCR. I think it was my grandma's VCR that we would borrow.
Yeah.
This and probably earlier than that was Christmas Eve on Sesame Street.
Oh, and man, that's another good one.
Those were two that we would watch all the time.
That actually is one that I think I want to show my children this Christmas is Christmas Eve on Sesame Street, because it's right in their wheelhouse right now, I think. So it's a good one. It's still good. Nice. It's adorable and cute and fun. It's holds up. Anyway, that's for another time. Yeah.
The Ernest Saves Christmas, great performances, a fun story. Mm-hmm. Did you want to kind of go through what the basic plot is?
Ernest, it's Ernest, if you don't know who Ernest is, he is a sort of what we call him a guileless character who kind of bumbles his way through things and has a great opinion of his knowledge of things, and he doesn't really know much, but he's incredibly charming and funny, played by a brilliant actor, Jim Varney, who Mike and I really revere. We have since, and I've been a fan, not as long as Mike, but since I was a kid as well. He's a kid. I mean, he's four kids. But the movie, came in at, it was, I don't have the year written down. It was in the 90s, but it came in at,
1988.
Thank you very much. It grossed $5.7 million. And it was in 1,600 theaters, so it was a pretty wide release. This was a big Ernest movie. Opening weekend was 5.7. It grossed $28 million, which is funny, is double Ernest Scared Stupid, and it only had a $6 million budget. It's a 38 on Rotten Tomatoes. That's their problem, and. And most of it was filmed in Orlando, Florida, which ironically is where I live now.
Whoa.
I know, right? Although most of the places where it was filmed are not there anymore, or they've been updated, which is too bad for me because I'd love to go, you know, back to those places. But okay, that's our quick and dirty about the movie.
Well, it's what happens is Ernest is a taxi driver, and the main plot is that Santa Claus needs to pass on his Santa Claus powers. The man who is Santa Claus is no longer going to be Santa Claus. And he has an idea who his replacement is going to be, and that's this guy who does a local kids TV show that has just been canceled.
Much like a Mr. Rogers character, would say. Like that beloved.
Yeah. And Ernest gets caught up in the whole plot.
Because he drives,
which is
Santa.
Something like what?
Because he drives Santa. Yeah, sorry, go ahead.
Oh, yeah. I just realized I can't see you, so I can't. Like,
oh.
I'd be like, oh, he's about to talk.
I'll loudly and rudely, clear my throat.
Oh, yes, he ends up being the taxi driver for Santa, and then they run into Harmony Starr, who is a young woman who has run away from home. She gets caught up in it. There's a lot of different things going on that keep the Ernest movie spinning.
Yeah, that's exactly. And it all culminates in Ernest literally saving Christmas and a new Santa Claus being chosen. It's a funny concept. I really like the idea that Santa is like, I need to retire. I'm getting old. He even says, like, I'm forgetting things, and that's not the way you should do things. And it's a pretty fun idea, because it's much like anybody retiring from a job. Like, this, you know what? Maybe I'm not cut out for this work anymore. I need to, you know. And so he knows of this guy, Joe Carruthers, in Orlando, and is like, I think he'd be a good guy to replace me.
I love in the beginning, like, Santa is, at first he's being sort of subtle about the fact that he's Santa, because the movie starts like this is the opening is pretty basic with just sort of a choir singing different Christmas carols and
yeah,
different sort of Coca-Cola Santa images.
Yeah.
But it also like sets a very fun festive tone. Get you in that Christmas spirit pretty quick.
It does this. It's the same thing with Ernest Scared Stupid. It serves the same purpose to really get you. Yeah, like you said, get you moved for that season and that in this case that holiday.
Yeah, and when Santa gets off the plane with another gentleman, like they're talking, and initially Santa's like, "Well, I'm from up north," and things like that. And then after a while, he's really just hammering it home of like, I can't remember who's naughty or nice.
Yeah.
And I just love how that builds, where you think like, oh, he's kind of being subtle. And it's like, oh, no,
he doesn't care who knows he's Santa Claus. He is not trying to cover up at all, because he tells as many people as possible, it seems, through the movie.
Because once they get to like, Santa's going through customs, I suppose. Like, he hands his passport over. That's how I knew it was in 1988, because it shows that he was born in 1837.
Wow.
And he's from Prussia.
Well, that's really interesting.
So I was like, huh. All right. And they have miles listed on there, which I didn't write down, but it's like billions.
Frequent flyer miles?
Something like that, yeah.
That's a fun idea.
Show something. Yeah, that's pretty funny. But later on, he does say he's 151 as well.
So, oh, yeah, exactly.
He's a good Santa. He was well cast.
I agree. Like, he's he has a doddering quality to him, but also he's very charming. He has a nice beard. You know, he hits all of those things.
As someone who has had a beard the majority of his adult life, I will say this most recent rewatching, I notice how fake his beard is. Him and Joe Carruthers both have pretty fake beards.
Joe, I feel like Joe's is terrible. I don't think I think Santa's is, to me, a masterpiece compared to Joe's, unfortunately.
Yeah. And it's fine. It's not a big deal, obviously.
It doesn't take away from the movie, really. I mean, as a kid, for sure, I did not notice. But yes, in the last, like, you know, 10 years or so of watching this, I have noticed, like, oh, boy, that's, oh, well, hey. We're also watching it on
TV's
way better.
Bigger.
Yeah. But also, you know, it wasn't maybe meant to be on DVD on a good TV. You know, like, you know, it was we were seeing things through a lot of more rose-colored TV sets, I guess.
Yes. Most TVs were rose-colored.
Wait, yours wasn't?
Moving on.
Yeah, sorry, go ahead.
We're introduced to Ernest pretty quick. Within like just under 4 minutes, he shows up, and he's got a great introduction here where he's the taxi driver, and you just hear him singing "Oh Christmas Tree" over and over, just saying those three words, "Oh Christmas Tree."
Oh Christmas Tree. Oh Christmas Tree. Oh Christmas Tree. Yeah, it's one of my favorite bits. I don't know why. It's like one of the, it's like just any Ernest bit. It just makes me giggle.
Yeah. Giggle.
But it also, like, it sounds... he's a happy guy who loves Christmas.
Yes. He feels like Christmas is his own personal holiday.
That's right. Yeah, yeah. I always thought Christmas was my own personal holiday. I love that when he his character, like when he stops to get the Christmas tree, like that informs a lot of his character too. Like he stops and gets his Christmas tree that was left on the side of the road. Stops, you know, causes a pileup, and also does quite a bit of damage to his taxi cab.
And he doesn't even need a Christmas tree.
No, he did. Exactly. He doesn't even need one. Oh my goodness. Okay.
I love after he picks up Santa. Mm-hmm. That's another great scene where he drops the guy off, and people are chasing him throughout the airport. Once he picks up Santa, I'm looking here.
Mike is feverishly reading his notes. His head moves back and forth.
I love how once he picks up Santa, like how much Ernest is turning to face Santa while he's driving.
Yeah. Yes. He's turned around a lot. Like not where you just turn your head and kind of, because you're not really looking in the back seat. Usually when you talk to people in the back seat, you're kind of turning your head as if to say like, hey, I'm talking this sort of this direction. No, he turns around almost completely and is talking.
Yeah.
He's talking to Santa.
It's pretty good because you am him. Because
you am him.
He just accepts that this guy's Santa. The moment he's
he
like.
He does.
I am him.
Yeah.
Well, all right. You're Santa.
Yeah, it's true. There's no convincing. He kind of, if I remember, he says like, come on. And he's like, yep, I'm Santa. Okay.
Because you am him. Yep. He says that sort of skeptically, but ultimately.
Yes.
Very accepting.
Very accepting. And then we meet, and I love the meeting of, Joe and Santa, because that whole Mr. Santos, like, because Joe's manager's kind of a jerk, and basically stops what could have been a very quick movie, obviously, but gets Santa, stops Santa from meeting Joe or speaking to him with any sort of length at any length. And gets him thrown into jail.
The stuff at the Children's Museum is a nice introduction, like you said. Like, you get the kind of slimy agent guy, and you get to see Joe, how good he is with the kids.
Right.
And him being there also leads him to being sent into jail.
Right, which is, man. Well, let's just talk about that. I love, you know, of course, this little old man, quote unquote, goes into jail. And then, you know, the next time we see him when he's getting released, Ernest and our new friend, Melody Starr, who we haven't talked about yet, but is this kid. I'll let Mike outline that because he usually does it with more facts. We see he's turned these hardened criminals into singing up the 12 days of Christmas. And it's such a good bit because like these guys have incredible voices, of course. And the man who sings and a partridge in a pear tree is in a completely different cell down the thing. And he's organized these guys magically to be a choir.
The one thing that I noticed while watching this is how I think it might be the sweatiest Christmas movie.
Because it is, because it was filmed in Florida.
Yeah.
Mostly.
And you'll just see people like kind of have some sweat on their face and necks. And I just like, I mean, understandably, it's hot in Florida.
And it probably wasn't filmed during cool months either. It was probably filmed during warm months.
Right. I was just like, I wonder if there's a sweatier Christmas movie than this one.
I mean, anything with Robin Williams, I would guess.
But where you can actually see it?
That's true. You're right. Yes. His would be hidden. Yeah, I don't know.
We're also introduced for the first time in the movies, mm-hmm. On cinema, we meet Chuck and Bobby, Gaylord Sartain, and Bill Burge. Burgie? Berg.
I'm not sure either. I assumed Berg. Burge? It could be because of the E.
B-Y-A-G-R. Throws me off.
If anybody knows how to pronounce the name, please write in or call.
Or B-Y-R-G-E. I think I said completely different letters the first time.
Q-U-A-Z-Y-X.
If anyone knows.
Burge. But, Chuck and Bobby. Yeah.
Yeah. They're a good comedy team. I do like their bits with the reindeer because they work at the airport. They receive this big box and they can't quite read what is said on the packing slip. And it turns out that all of Santa's reindeers are inside a big box.
Mm-hmm. And we get to see, and Chuck and Bobby, this iteration of Chuck and Bobby, there's another in Scared Stupid is different, but these two are the same as in Ernest Goes to Jail, which is another fabulous, and is my favorite Ernest movie. But yeah, we see some fun stuff between Chuck and Bobby. And we cut back to that a lot, which I like too, as we kind of go back to that plot because it becomes very important, but not until the last 10 minutes of the film, close to the end. Finally, we see like the reindeer come out and the helper elves get to the airport.
Yeah, it's. The movie set up sort of like everyone has kind of a something going on. Our characters, our main plot is definitely Santa Claus needing to replace himself. Like you mentioned, Harmony Star, we meet her. They almost hit her, but he slams on the brakes. She jumps in, she hits the gas, and now we have our three musketeers for the film.
You know, it's funny. Because we go first, he's like, great, I met you. Let me take you to this Christmas party. And we get to see Vern. Well, we don't see Vern, but like we.
Yes.
I don't know. Vern's in this one kind of inexplicably, and he's not in it much. But he's
the
not
only
in,
film is that, the, that Vern is making an appearance, so to speak.
Yeah. We don't see. We don't see Vern in anything else. He's a character. He's an invisible character from the films that is Ernest's, I don't know, what would we say, best friend?
He's his neighbor.
He's his neighbor.
Yeah, I don't think Vern would like hearing that Ernest is his best friend.
You're right. You're right. Sorry, Vern, wherever you are now.
Because the character of Ernest grew out of television commercials. And those commercials had a very specific style where the camera was... basically the viewpoint of the viewer, and Ernest would be talking straight to camera as if he's talking to Vern, mm-hmm. who is sort of the consumer, the person watching the TV at that time, and became a huge hit through those ads, became very popular, and they got into the movie business because of how popular those commercials were, and in Ernest Saves Christmas, they decided to sort of pay tribute, like working Vern into the films, into the film. And it is a very funny, a very entertaining moment, because Ernest comes in and it's, you know, alluded to that Vern is an astrophysicist and he has this very nice home, and they just burst in and, you know, Ernest tears the place apart.
Yeah, it's craziness. It just, for whatever reason, like, it just becomes pure sort of craziness and insanity. And for whatever reason, Melody is, like, right on board with it, too. Like, she's, like, you know, just talking nonstop. He's talking nonstop, coming in, breaking stuff. You know, we're seeing the camera move as if Vern is just sort of, like, I don't know. I feel like he's in shock watching all of this happen around him.
One of the main things that Ernest ends up doing is like ripping the like light socket out of Vern's wall.
That's right.
Just he keeps pulling on it until it like, you know, explodes one of the light bulbs. And then when we cut back, he's still doing it and it's ripping apart the chandelier.
Mm-hmm.
It's very inner. And they use a couple gags from the commercials as well, like in the pancake bit later on when he's flipping the pancakes. That's straight out of some of the commercials.
Yeah.
So I like that they kind of paid tribute to their roots by working in some of their older bits into this movie, because, you know, at the time they were commercials, but that wasn't, you know, guaranteed that anyone would see them. They ended up putting the commercials on VHS and then later DVD, but
I think I first knew him from like the Sprite commercials. Those were pretty big, because he had, not only did they do like regional commercials, like they did some national commercials for Sprite and some other things I'm forgetting right now. But like, yeah,
I don't know if those were national.
Oh, you don't think so?
I think the Sprite ones, even though Sprite is a national
brand
product, I think they were still like locally produced for very specific markets.
Then it would have been in Iowa. Yeah, that's very interesting.
Because one of the big things that they stayed away from was national spots, because they wanted Jim Varney as Ernest, they wanted him to have that local feel to him, that it was like specific to those areas that they made commercials for.
Well, yeah, you can. I mean, it was basically like ordering. It sounds like a custom commercial. Like, we want this guy doing for our Ford dealership. You know,
correct.
And if he goes national, But if you go national, then that sort of ruins that whole. Everybody's seen him now. You know,
right? Yeah, I think that's what's so impressive, that they were able to turn their commercials into, you know, a series of movies for the Walt Disney Company.
Which is like crazy. Yeah. Wild. Yeah, I agree. Yeah, absolutely.
And it all is based on the talents of Jim Varney bringing this Ernest character to life.
Yeah, we've talked about this, you and I, about what a great actor he is. And he does. There's so much, I don't know. He has a great sense of comedy, but he can also play a lot of different characters. We see in other films like montages of him playing different characters, just sort of, honestly, I'm guessing just sort of riffing, you know, being in character and just saying stuff, because a lot of it is just sort of apropos of nothing, just kind of making comedy out of nowhere, you know?
Yeah. And then, you know, that leads to, like you said, like when Ernest breaks Santa out of jail, we meet Astor Clement.
Oh, yeah.
Is sort of his more snooty character, and has a very funny part in that. And that leads us to Auntie Nelda, and then eventually the snake guy. And there's, you know, we can talk more in depth about those different characters, but, you know, this is the first movie where Ernest is playing different characters in the movie, and those are three pretty strong, fun characters to bring in.
Yeah, Auntie Nelda is my favorite by far, in Stupid and in Jail and in this one. to me, this the I don't know, just the voice, mannerisms, everything. Yeah. Hysterical.
That was my sister and I used to always quote Auntie Nelda, where she's like, when she's talking about how she had two sons, one good, one bad, and wouldn't you know it, the good one dies.
It's just so dark for a kids movie too. Like, I mean, but hey, sometimes it's just, it's comedy gold. You got to leave it in.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, go ahead.
I was just going to mention the snake guy, because like, he has kind of a connection to you in a way.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. He's from a specific place in Florida, of which I am well acquainted.
Yes. I had not heard of that place, you know, outside of, I didn't realize it was a city. I thought it was just sort of like a made up, oh, this is the name of the snake, the snake wrangler.
And I place. Don't think I noticed it until I'd moved to Florida and knew that it was a place that I, like, it just happened to notice after, because did I say already? Like, I watch this every year on, around Christmas, so I'd seen it a billion times. Yeah, that sucked. So the town is Apopka, Florida, which is, I live in Orlando, so I know where Apopka is. So it's just very interesting that they took a real, like, they picked a real town for this snake guy to be, and the fact that it's in like the lamest like sticker letters you could buy at Home Depot, they just put them together. It's like, I can't even remember the name of his snake wrangler. It's just where it's from. That's the only part that I'm remembering right now. But his voice in that one's fantastic, and is like his offer of you want one for your boy. Like, yeah. Do you want a snake? Do you want to bring a snake home to your son? Because that's what every father's like, you know what, he doesn't have a snake yet, let's get him a honey, let's get him a snake. Where'd you get the snake? The studio today, this guy was bringing some in for a movie, and he offered one to me, and I just took it. Where's it? It's in my lunch pail. he's got to take it home somehow.
There's, you know, the plot overall kind of is Santa trying to get Joe, and Joe kind of saying no, and then them trying to find different ways to kind of get to Joe and tell him, and, you know, funny gags and things along the way. This is probably, in my opinion, this is the most, and they're all family friendly movies, I would say, but this one probably this was the most like mainstream, Ernest film, just because it, you know, everyone can watch it and not be worried about being offended.
Yeah, I'd say.
But it also has, can you hear me okay? Or?
Yeah.
Oh.
I'm listening.
Good.
It's family friendly. Yeah. Did I do something that made you think I wasn't
it's
here
family
anymore?
Friendly. And I think it's, you know, as far as if Christmas movies are accessible to you, like, I think this one would be enjoyable, just with the humor and sort of sweetness that it has to it.
It's true. Yeah. I like that you said sweetness too, because like a lot of the characters are just sweet. Like Ernest is sweet. Santa's sweet. Joe is, in a lot of ways, the old lady that works at the place too. Like, she's very sweet. It just, there is definitely a sweetness to it. Melody becomes sweet at the end. She's, you know, kind of portrays herself as this hardened runaway, when really, I mean, just, you know, she just ran away because things weren't great at home.
Yeah.
But what did you think about the way, like, Joe's sort of story, as far as like him trying to make it quote unquote big?
Yeah, I think that part of it, you know, I think it sort of just creates a roadblock as to why, like, Joe wouldn't just be like, oh, sure, yeah, I'll be Santa. That's cool. It gives him like this roadblock and puts him on a very different possible career path, but I think like that's used mainly to show how sweet of a person he is, that he doesn't want to use curse words, that he feels, because he ends up getting offered a role in a movie called Christmas Slay, which is slay as in to kill. It's like a horror Christmas movie. And even though like he's offered a big role in a big studio film, he turns it down due to its content. Mm-hmm. So I think like that sort of, you know, is in the movie to speak to his character of what actually is important to him.
Yeah, I like that part. It's like a total, it's another save the cat moment for Joe. Although, to be honest, by the looks of the production value of the screen test he did with Christmas Slay, I think he was going to be a loser. I would say, Joe, this is not a movie you want to be in. Special effects, bad. Director, bad. Child actors, they were fine. They're fine. Your lack of beard. Yeah. We liked your fake beard better than your non-beard.
The director is an interesting character, just because like,
how dare you? How dare you sit there? Yeah, he is a very, how dare you sit there and tell me how to direct my movie?
Well, I think that's the producer who yells at
him. Oh, is it the producer?
All right. Yeah. The director's like he's like a tall blonde guy.
Oh yes, yes. I'm sorry. Yeah, I'm thinking of the producer. Sorry.
And he's just sort of like, because I think he's purposely played to like kind of like not like really have his own thoughts.
Nope.
So to speak.
Agreed.
And it's just it's a funny interpretation, but I couldn't tell if it's like, is that like how the actor's playing it, or is that an accident? I don't know. But entertaining regardless.
Yeah. Something we should talk about too is the bag, Santa's bag,
which
I think is a really cool Christmas thing that, I don't know that I've ever seen in another Christmas movie, at least not portrayed in that way where, the bag, they can just, if you're Santa, you just open the bag and it gives you what you need for that house. But Melody tries it into like getting, what she wants for Christmas, which she says is just money. She wants to just reach in and get money, but of course she gets all kinds of other toys and stuff. But that sort of addition to the mythology, I really liked.
Yes, yeah, they're like you said, that addition, the way that they handle like their version of Santa is very entertaining, very clever. Just kind of some different stuff, and yeah, Santa's sack is a pretty fantastical item. You can just reach in and you pull out an orb, and then it turns into some sort of toy.
Oh yeah, I forgot. You're right. The orb part. Yes, it does. You know what's funny too is that it doesn't require a lot of special effects either to make that magic happen. You know, they can just some props and some acting. That's the best. Yeah. Like I like that kind of thing. It seems like, wow, any bag could be this magical this magical thing, which is what's fun about Christmas movies, is that, you know, you'd like to think they could happen, whether it's like some cheesy romantic Christmas movie or one where, you know, the kid gets exactly what he wanted for Christmas. You'd like to think it could happen to you.
Right. Yeah. I agree. Oh, something that I liked was that, you know, like when the reindeer all kind of get out, Chuck and Bobby end up calling animal control.
Yeah.
And the two people that come in are Daniel Butler.
Yep.
And Jackie Welch.
Mm-hmm.
And Daniel Butler is a part of an episode we'll be talking about at some point, because he's the dad, the sheriff in Ernest Scared Stupid. And he's in the other, he's in Ernest Goes to Camp as Jake. He's paired with Chuck. Instead of Chuck and Bobby, it's Chuck and Jake.
That's him?
Mm-hmm.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
That's crazy. Wow. good work. He melted into that character.
Yeah.
Man, wow. Now I've got to go back and watch that again.
And then he's got a small cameo and goes to jail where he's the a waiter. And gets a fork thrown at him.
Okay.
But he was someone, I believe he wrote for some of the, be it the commercials, the TV show, because he was in the TV show as a barber as well. But he's been part of the Ernest world for a long time, which is, it's great to see him pop up in
His
role.
And doesn't happen with a lot of other, not that I can think of any other characters, like he's kind of, yeah. But and she was also in Scared Stupid, right?
Yes, she's the teacher in Scared
Stupid.
Yes,
that's right.
Yes.
Oh man,
she's the judge and goes to jail.
Oh, you're right. Wow, things are connecting.
Yeah,
that's incredible.
But I believe this was their first appearance on the big screen.
Okay.
With the Ernest films.
Awesome.
Oh, wait, no, I'm wrong, because I just said that Daniel Butler was in Ernest Goes to Camp.
Oh, so. Yeah, that which was the first one.
I immediately proved myself wrong.
That's okay. That's why pencils have erasers.
Wow.
did you not know that about pencils?
No, this is news. Glad I'm on this podcast. I thought that's where you held the pencil from.
I mean, you can. That's not the way traditionally people do it.
Hmm.
But, you know, I mean, I feel like you, if anyone could pull it off, it's not you. Probably not you.
No, I've never been able to pull those erasers off. I chew the top off sometimes. But.
And we digress. This is where I say, and we're back.
I like that the thrill driver aspect of Ernest,
Ernest
pops
B.
up
World.
Like in the
thrill
beginning
driver. Yeah.
And then at the end, like, it's like, oh, of course, like he's sort of, you know, he drives that, he drives the truck for a hot minute. And then he gets to drive Santa's sled, all leading into his, the fact that he's a thrill driver.
Because at this point, and I like this too about this movie, is it builds. It does come to a climax around now. It builds nicely where all the plots are starting to sort of come together, and there is definitely some urgency with getting the sleigh to Santa. Because now we've like Joe has accepted has he accepted it for now? But Santa's gotten to actually speak to Joe.
Yes.
And he's given him the
option. Initially, the last time, like, Joe says no, and then he goes to have a meeting with the producer and the director. That's where the producer yells at him. And so Santa has no Joe, he has no magic sack, and he has no sled. So Santa's waiting outside the children's hospital, sort of, you know, concerned that this is the end of it, right?
It's 11th hour.
Yeah. All our characters are split up into a different direction. Ernest went to go get the reindeer and sleigh, but he ran over some sharp spikes. So now he has to try and get the sleigh there by flying it there. But Santa has no idea about that or what's
Santa
going on.
Santa's just
there.
Sitting there. He's super depressed.
Yes. Yeah. And then the woman who works at the museum comes out and they're sitting together. And then Joe sees Ernest on the sleigh flying around outside the window and realizes, you know, he doesn't want to be this movie star. He doesn't want to do the movie. He wants to be Santa, that it's real. So he runs out of there, yells Merry Christmas, runs out to his car.
And to all a good night.
And speeds over there. Meanwhile, Melody, I always want to say Melanie, but it's Melody.
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 Because she wants to be a singer. She's a star.
Mm-hmm. I should have written down what her actual name was. Because it's revealed later on that that's
Patty?
A fake name.
Patricia? Patty? I can't remember.
Patricia Patty.
Why am I just guessing? Who cares? Anyway, yes, that's not her real name, but
she's going to steal the magic bag.
That's right. She's on her way back. She's on her way to, she's at the bus station waiting for her bus.
Yeah. And then because a brother and sister, the older brother is teasing the younger sister that Santa doesn't exist. She blurts out that he does and that this is his sack. And then they're like, well, why do you have it? And then she takes off running. But not before calling her mother first, as we find out later.
That's right. And we find out that she when they ask her, why do you have the sack, you can see her think to herself, that's a good question.
Yeah.
So we've got Joe hurtling towards the Orlando Science Center, as I now know it is. We have Ernest flying towards the Orlando Science Center, and we have Melody. I don't know how she gets there. Walks?
She runs.
She's running there. She's Tom Cruising it there. She is running so much to get there, and they all converge at the same time.
Pretty much, they all get there before Ernest does. It's like Joe has accepted it. They've shaken hands. Joe turns into Santa. Melody hands over the bag. That's when Joe says like, no, you're not. You're so-and-so.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he knows her name because he suddenly knows everything that Santa knows.
Yeah, my apologies to the listeners who do know her name.
And are screaming at us. I like that Joe gets a different beard. They don't make him fat though. Santa's not fat in this, which I also kind of like.
Joe's a little husky. Joe's a little bit of a husky
He is as a person, but they haven't like ostentatiously added a belly to him or anything.
Right.
It's not like the Santa Claus where, you know, Tim Allen suddenly grows hairy and gigantic. Well, not gigantic, but it gets kind of big all at once. But Santa, yeah, he gets a much better beard.
Yes.
Much better fake beard, I would say. Maybe it's just because we don't see it long that I think it's much better. And then Ernest comes in, and I do, like, yes, it. This is like other Ernest movies where he is the star. However, a lot of the plot points are not him.
No.
Like, the whole thing
is like the comic relief.
He is. He's the lead and the comic relief, which is kind of strange, honestly. He's propelling his own movie, yet he's not in it. Sort of. Because, like, all the Joe and Santa stuff is all them. We see several scenes with Melody just by herself. You know, like, it's not, yeah, I don't know. I just find that very interesting structurally. Oh,
yeah, no, same. And just real quick, Pamela Trenton.
There we go. Pamela Trenton. I was close with Patricia.
Yeah, you were. Closer than I was, for sure.
But not Patricia Patty, just so people know. Not Patricia Patty. She's not in. She's not a character from Doug.
Patty Mayonnaise. Like, it is a weird, like, it is a fun, like you said, like, just with the lore of Santa in this world, how, like, he hands over his powers, and then I think he says his name's Seth Applegate.
Yes.
And he's just a normal guy again.
And he immediately has a date.
Yes.
Because of course.
Good for him. But it is good for him in the way that, like, what else? Like, he wouldn't have a home to go to.
That's what I always thought. Like, what is this poor old guy going to do? Like, he's going out. So the old lady from the Orlando Science Center is like, yeah, I don't have any plans for Christmas. How sad. These two people have no plans for Christmas Eve. So they're going to get together. But then I always think, what happens afterwards? Does he say, can I crash on your couch?
Right.
To, like, get back on my feet? Because, like, yeah, he goes to, like, yeah, I don't know what his life is now. It seems like he doesn't have one.
Right.
He has removed
it. I did wonder if, like, he just – eventually takes over Joe's stuff.
Oh, that's an interesting idea.
You know,
rather than retiring.
Right. Like, well, I mean, he retires, but then he gets Joe's house. He has Joe's.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
Everything, all the realty, all the mortgage, everything transfers, the paper. That's the real movie here, Mike. All the transferring of the paperwork.
The paperwork.
That's the we need to write that, the after Santa. We'll call it after Santa. Santa becomes Santa. Well, I think we've talked about pretty much all of it. I love that it was, I love that it's filmed here in the city in which I live. That gives it, that's even more fun. For one of my, seriously, my top 10 favorite, Christmas movies. And I know 10 might not seem high, but I love so many Christmas movies. Mike, why does this stick out to you as a holiday film? Like, what makes you, besides that it's earnest, like, what makes you keep coming back to it?
I like that it's funny to me. Like, I enjoyed that element of it. I think it has, like we said, the characters are sweet. It has a sweetness. It, you know, it has its feet grounded in reality with added bits of magic and wonder. And I think I come back to it, like you said, Ernest. I'm a big Jim Varney fan. And I just think it's a good, unique Christmas story. Like the replacing of Santa, and just how they handle those elements. It's unique and special in that way.
Couldn't have said it any better. For me, nope. Yeah, it is. It is a great holiday film, even though it is the sweatiest Christmas. It's the sweatiest Christmas movie. It certainly is. If you haven't seen it, go see it. Even if you're not an Ernest fan, I think it is a great. It's a great family Christmas movie, and I do honestly think it holds up. There's nothing too specific about it that it doesn't hold up as a Christmas movie. That does add to the Santa Claus lore in, I think, a very fun way. I think that's it from us. Thank you, Mike, so much for coming on and talking with me about Ernest. Yeah. I'll have you on again where we don't talk about Ernest, though I'm not sure. That might be sad. I know it might be.
I'd probably work it in somehow. Or,
Every Christmas movie relates back to Ernest Saves Christmas. I can handle
it. I will happily come out and talk about Christmas Eve on Sesame Street.
You know what? It's a date.
Hooray!
Let's do it. Yeah, absolutely, because I love that one as well. So basically, this podcast is now just movies Mike and I enjoy. Which there are a lot of.
I'm into it. Subscribe.
All right. Thank you, Mike, and thank you, me, and we will see you next time. Thank you for listening. Matt's Holiday Movie Madness.